Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. It's always a pleasure to see old friends and new. We welcome you here as we are a group of independent thinkers, not professing attachment to any organization, which is unusual in today's day and age. What we try and do is keep the straight line teachings among all the lodges around the world so that that study has even more force behind it. And you'll find if you come to these rooms often, you'll be sitting with a question burning in your mind and someone else will ask the exact same question. So we tend to get on the same vibration when we're studying the same teaching. The basis for that union is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. There are no officers, bylaws. There is no discrimination as to race or creed, sex, condition. All we ask is that you come with an open mind and give as you can. Everything done at this lodge is on a volunteer basis, from the person first turning on the lights to paying the heating bill in the winter, the air conditioning in the summer. So if you choose to give, let's say, even $1 is all you can do, put it in the little box on top of the bookcase on the way out. It doesn't have to be known, but it will go a long way and it will stay here and be used to keep these principles going. The Lodge regards as theosophists all engaged in the true service of humanity. So we think there are many more out there than we could put a label on. Anyone who is working for his brother or sister in an altruistic way is a theosophist, is working for that same purpose. So to put those ideas forth, we have two meetings a week. Wednesday nights, the doors open at 5:15. The reference library is open till 7:15, and there's a volunteer helper in there should you wish to read the reference for the evening or look up some other materials, or if you just have a general question, they can direct you to something that might be of interest. It closes at 7:15, 7:30 to 8:30. We have a study group on Wednesday nights, and we're currently studying The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. I believe we're on chapter 5. Am I right about
six.
That?
Six.
Okay. Five, the second half of 5, right? Something like that. And what you will hear today will be coming up in the book. So there may be some recollection at that time, and it might have a deeper meaning for you, is our hope. On Sundays, doors open at 10:30, meeting starts at 11, ends at noon. Now, each month has an overall title, and for December, it is The Cycles of Life. Today, we will be discussing Between Two Lives. And next Sunday's topic is The World of Dreams. Very interesting. And then just to round out the month, The Symbols of Christmas and New Year, New Cycle will end December. There's also a card, if you haven't seen it, on the book table where you can buy straight line theosophical material very, very cheaply. We don't make a profit. Whatever it costs us to ship it here from India or California, that's what we charge you. But this is a sort of a membership card. It simply says, I'm aligning myself with these ideas and I want it recorded. And you sign your name, and it's just something to think about. So this morning, we have Between Two Lives, which would make us think we're talking about the after-death states. So my partner will begin with the first, and I will follow up after.
This is a quote from Isis. As the Kabbalists say, as the Kabbalists justly say, death does not exist, and man never steps outside of universal life. Now, there's a popular view of death. Most of us never confront or see anyone pass. Most of the time we get a call in the night, Aunt so-and-so it's drew a last breath, or cousin so-and-so went to the other side or transitioned, whatever kind words they choose to use, but we don't witness it. Most of our idea of it, of death and the moment and the passing is usually gathered from popular media, you know, the movies or television, where you see the person is already in a bad position, reclining perhaps, and then the head turns and the eyes shut. Someone will put their fingers on the throat and look at the survivor and shake his head mournfully. That's it, it's over, that's the end of it. And it gives that impression that death is instantaneous. That's it, okay, he's been touched on the neck and he's not responding, he's not breathing, it's all over. But I think we would get a better idea of death if we go to the other end of life and look at birth. If you ask any mother, was her child, did she ever have any children that were instantly born, you will be faced with a resounding no. It is a time, it takes time. And those of us who study these teachings come across it time and time again. Nature does not move abruptly. It's a slow transition from one point to the other, slow but inevitable. And so it is with death. So once we get the ground feeling for this slow and inevitable process, perhaps we should look at it closer. All that we can find out would probably help us in our lives. So theosophy informs us that when the eyes close and the temperature drops and the body ceases to move, that at that time there's a great process that begins within that body that we think of as dead, that the doctor has told us has passed, that forces within that body are rushing through the brain. And by using, I guess we could call them pictures of the life just lived, it impresses those in its evacuation, it impresses those on these different constituent parts that are leaving. And these pictures, because the body is dead, these pictures are so vivid that there's nothing left out. Even the most minute details, things that you walk by and see in the peripheral of your vision that you would never even remember in your current state, you see them, you remember them. This is the preparation that is being made for the true death. Now, there are men, adepts, who know this process so well, to whom nature has no secrets, that at this stage of what we call death, they had the power to still call life back into that body. The legends of Lazarus, Jesus of the New Testament, Apollonius, and many others. Those legends that you read about them, they are the ones who understood this process so well. So with this in mind, we know now that it's not an instantaneous thing, or we have been shown, or we can find that it's not instantaneous. So let's look a little bit deeper into what it really is and what the process is. Materialistic science gives us one idea. It more or less agrees with what we see on the screen, that when that final breath is drawn and those eyelids shut and the body goes cold, it's all over. Religion comes and says, well, it's not all over. This person will go to heaven or to hell. Two things that challenge geography and reason. We can't find a heaven or hell. We can't trace to a heaven or hell. The foundations of that particular idea put forth are weak. So what do we see? We look back to the ancient teachings and all of the messengers who have come to us, all of the adepts, all of the wise ones, and quite a few of the older societies, including Egypt, that documented it, although allegorically, and we look to them for the answer. And this is what is told to us. The body, after the body dies, the constituent parts, the remaining parts, divide. They become three. The body deteriorates on this level. The astral body and the passions, though remaining, begin to deteriorate. Excuse me for 1 second. Kama Rupa, astral body, and the passions and desires, which also begin at once to go to pieces on the astral plane. But the real man, that enduring self, that part that knows neither death nor birth, which is composed of Atma, Manas, and Buddhi, is now out of the earth conditions. It has no body, and it's devoid of a body. It begins its pilgrimage in Devakan. All of this takes place in Kama Rupa, the place of desire.
Kamaloka,
the place of desire. That title is not what it seems to be. It would seem to be Kamaloka, place of desire. It seems to be maybe a 1940s movie about some place that would be, you know, romantic junction. It's not. In fact, it's far away from that. This is the astral region that penetrates and surrounds the earth. As a place, it is on, in, and about the earth. Being the purely astral sphere, it partakes of the nature of the astral matter, which is essentially earthy and devilish, and in it, all the forces work undirected by soul or conscience. It is most likely the origin of the Christian theory of purgatory, where the soul undergoes penance for evil done and from which it can be released by prayer and other circumstances, other ceremonies or offerings. The fact of that is the souls that are trapped in this particular region are usually held there by some unfulfilled desire, and they can't break free of that shackle until that desire is met. It can be helped by someone on still here on this side or by that soul itself. But that desire has to be satisfied before it can continue on with its journey. The other thing about Kamaloka is that it's always thought of, and rightly so, as an after-death state. However, it's not just an after-death state. In our lives, we are also exposed to Kamaloka, because it is referred to often as the world of the elementals, of which there are seven classes, four of which we deal with constantly with every motion of our lower principles. They are deemed principles because they are our basis of action in matter. In themselves, they are the four elements of earth, water, air, and fire. Now, there are also three higher elements which compose our spiritual form as an exact antithesis of the four human body of matter. Mind is neither one form or the other, but a temporary embodiment of two. I'm stretching my time, but there is beyond that, be taken into consideration, the exceptions to everything that you heard, and those are suicides and those who are forcefully ejected from life. Suicides destroy the body, and those who are executed or killed also, it's a destruction of the body, not a destruction of the other components of man. What that means is the body is gone and everything else remains, including the appetites and the desires and everything else, still here, still trying to deal with what it was that drove them to suicide in the first place. And it cannot be, it doesn't end. What happens is the rest of those parts live out whatever the balance of that life was. If it was a 20-year-old man and he was supposed to live to 60, he spends 40 years of dealing with those, with this non-body, the same appetites, wants to eat, wants to hug a woman, wants to do whatever, but he has no body to do it. So desire grows and becomes even more pronounced and more strong. Children who die before a certain age, they skip all of this because they have built no karma with which to deal, you know, that has to be dealt with. After that sojourn in Kamaloka is over, then it moves next into the next level, which my partner will take up now.
Thank you. One of the things for us to remember is that these after-death states are subjective, meaning, first of all, we just heard the word karma, and it is very important in studying this, because everything that happens after life is what we built up through our lifetime. So if we were selfish, and if we were cruel and angry a lot of the time, there's a lot to slough off in that Kamaloka, those unfulfilled bad or evil desires. And when they are detached from that entity, they coalesce, as was said, with the astral and become a shell. And that is a difficulty because this is something without a brain, cannot think, cannot act for itself, but is magnetically drawn to wherever there is a lot of energy, a lot of magnetism, or of course, seances and so forth. So they may say, your cousin Marie is with us, and it might just be a passing shell, and actually does damage to those in the room. So we're cautioned over and over again not to get involved with that. So, as my partner said, once the constituents of the body separate, the three higher go into this blissful state called Devakan. We might call it heaven. And we might call Kamaloka purgatory, which would mean earth would be hell. But that's up to us. That's how we use our thoughts and feelings and will. So we're finished with the after-death review. We're finished with purgatory. We are now entering a dreamy sort of, I don't want to say trance-like, but just a blissful state where all of the higher desires and altruistic attitudes that we weren't able to fulfill. Let's say in life, I really would like to help the poor, but I don't know where to begin. I'll just send love. Well, it's a partially unfulfilled altruistic desire. That's the kind of thing that is resolved in Devakan. And Devakan is a needed rest state. We can analogize that with sleep. What happens to the human being when he doesn't sleep for 3 or 4 or 5 days? Within a certain amount of time, he's going to lose his mind. He can't concentrate, he can't focus. That is why some time in Devakan is necessary, because we couldn't just come back and pick up the same stream of life. We wouldn't be prepared properly. So it is said from the masters that the general period of time in Devakan is 1,000 to 1,500 years, but that time there has no relation with time here. Only the masters know the elements of time and space. So it's dreamy, and when we're sleeping on this plane, the physical is a dream. So too in Kamaloka. This is by Lewis Carroll. In a wonderland they lie, dreaming as the days go by, dreaming as the summers die, ever drifting down the stream, lingering in the golden gleam. Life, what is it but a dream? So we are completely engulfed in our own little cocoon that we have made. You know, the popular notion that upon death, all our relatives and friends will be waiting for us is not exactly true. What the philosophy says is, once you are in Devakan, you imagine those loved ones perfect. Let's say you had a child with a handicap, born with a handicap. When you are in Devakan, you see that child happy and running and playing, and you're sending love to this image. So nothing can be done. There can't be communication, because there's no body, there's no way to communicate except through love. And it says, I think it's in the ocean, it's, or it might be in this little pamphlet, by the way, is wonderful, What is Death? those that we love greatly, we may see them in our cocoon of a Devakan, but we see them the way we wanted to see them, the life, kind of life we wanted for them. And any of us who have lost people have known days where we just feel a presence or some love or some protection. And we know it's from the one who passed. We know it intuitively. That's the only kind of communication we can have, except right after the death of the physical. That astral may show itself to one. But other than that, there's no communication. It would interrupt the bliss. This is a blissful state that's been earned karmically by that soul. So the whole process is remedial, restful, and beneficial. And it says, the ego being minus the mortal body and kama clothes itself in Devakan with a vesture which cannot be called a body. So we can't even imagine what that is. So we talked, and as to how long we're there, go back every 1500 years and see what was happening at that time. Do we have Roman gladiators today? There's plenty of football players that would say yes. There are, you know, the remnants, the essence of that last time we lived, we bring back with us. Because what was sloughed off in Kamaloka is waiting for us. They're called skandhas, and they will magnetically be drawn to the higher soul before it reincarnates. So we bring back some essence. So it's a fun study, and of course the line is, if we don't change our history, we're doomed to repeat it. Learn our history, we're doomed to repeat it. And there, I'm running out of time. And there is also tanha, the thirst for life, which actually helps to draw back the individual into a new life. Now, the wonderful thing is, just before, let's say those periods of after death are completed, there is a moment, a period where the soul gets a preview of the coming life and knows it to be just because it is aware of all its past karma. So all of a sudden the skandhas attach, the magnetic trash, so shall we say, we left behind. And a soul is on its way back to Earth. But karmically, we are able to accomplish more if we have earned it by the way we've acted in previous lives. So it's not necessarily the karma from the last life. It could be whatever karma is appropriate that we can work out. So we should always be working on solving our problems and being gentle with others and knowing that all of that we have an effect on everything around us. Questions? Yes, in the back.
It's interesting.
Oh, sorry. It's okay. Go ahead.
It's interesting that our theme for the month is called the cycles. Life, and our first talk is on the after death stage. It seems to suggest to us that our lives here are just a very small aspect of our total life, and that somehow it's actually what goes on after death is even more valuable to our overall life.
Well, there are some who say that this life that we lived and cling to is itself a dream. and that death is when we wake up to the real life. You know, people say, well, it's not a dream, you know, what's the difference between this life and real life? Well, in a dream, you wake up. From this life, the waking up is the death, when you slough off the body and you then become truly awake.
But we would agree, in the scope of time, our individual lives are points, pearls on a string, on a great big spiraling string that is the whole Manvantara, is the Sanskrit word for the complete evolutionary system. We go through millions of years of evolution. But each lifetime is important because we can't evolve without it. We can only have contact on this plane. And having had contact on this plane, we have to have the after-death states. But the timing, yes, in the corner.
During the period of time where Kamaloka is being experienced, is the higher triad involved at all in that, or are they in Devakan as the lower aspects are in Kamaloka, or does one have to be completed before the other can happen?
Interesting question. It is simply the lower four that need Kamaloka. The higher three, the Atma, Buddhi, Manas, the spirit, soul, spiritual soul, and mind, don't need Kamaloka because they are what will, as an entity, go into Devakan. So when the separation happens, we imagine just a waiting period until this process is done, if anyone has any thoughts on that.
What we were going to ask a question on, earlier we said that death may be, and after death states may be more real than this state here. And we realize that there is a lot of illusion. It's Maya, all is Maya in a sense, but we're conscious and we're self-conscious and we choose. Do we get to choose in the after-death states? Because then we would think it's less real if we don't have the power of choice. Do we get to choose our illusions that entertain us, or?
The illusions aren't so much for entertaining. The illusions are more for education and for building character. And as far as choice is concerned, I'm trying to think how to put this. Those wise beings to whom we owe so much, do they really have choice, or are they good, just good? Not good or bad, just good. Are they dealing with choice, or are they dealing with who they are?
They're one with the law.
Exactly. Say exactly that. It's a universe of law.
Right.
So if we have put something into motion, we must have its return. And if we have colored those desires in a certain way, they're either going to come out in Kamaloka or in Devakan, but we don't get to choose.
And that that idea of choice really is peculiar to this particular level. Mm-hmm. In order, it's like heat making, turning iron into steel. It is peculiar to this particular level to bring out the best in us, to make us choose. That is the self-motivated things that we do to make ourselves be what we want to seek perfection.
And it's hard to imagine, but again, these are subjective states. We are not active in them. We cannot say, all right, I'll take that one, this one, and this one. Oh, I see, I need to do. There's none of that going on. There is simply the reaping of what we have sown. So there cannot be any active choice being made.
Excellent question.
So it's an effect state.
Yes.
We're not really choosing though.
Yeah.
We've already sown the seeds.
Yes.
For whatever the results are.
Yes.
Then we're not really we're conscious, but not really self-conscious, are we?
If you look,
that's the thing.
But if you look at it, if you look at it from the point of view that you're there because of the choices that you made, the soul that is weighted down with bad deeds and coarseness of personality is where it's still in kama loka, in a deep sleep, either of hell there. That was because of the choices that you made. These are the results. You are in Devakan because of the choices that you made. These are the results. The choice has already been made. You don't have to make the choice again.
And it also tells us that if it's been a very sort of bland life without a lot of energetic movement, you will have a dreamlike, they say torpid, a dreamlike after death state, whether it be Kamaloka or Devakan. So it really does pertain to the life last lived. Your hand was up.
Somewhere, and I can't remember where, in HPB's writing, maybe it's the Key Theosophy, there are instructions as to how to prepare yourself or your loved ones, that at the time of death, that or immediately after death, the body should not be disturbed in any way, that you don't want to have a lot of stuff going on while the person who just died is going through all this. Do you remember where that is and what exactly those instructions are?
I don't remember where it is, where it can be found, but the key?
No, I think the young lady in the back remembers where.
Okay.
No, but also I'm not quite sure where it's either, but also something about for like 12 hours?
Yeah.
12 hours,
this
yes.
level of time?
Right.
Undisturbed.
Is it the ocean?
It's not in the ocean. But the idea is, after the physical death to our eyes, if possible, to leave the body in a quiet place, undisturbed, for 12 hours. That's while that review is taking place. And it says if there's a lot of noise and crying and distraction, it makes it a difficult experience rather than just going right through it. And it also recommends cremation because it will help to disintegrate those kamarupas, those shells and the bad stuff.
They break down fast.
Again, the cremation should take place after those 12 hours or whatever time. And yes, you don't want to have a lot of people wailing around you. On the other hand, if a family sits with the deceased and just helps mentally, quietly.
That's fine. That's fine.
No, I think that's a figment of the imagination to help somebody else die.
I don't think that's what you said.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't mentally help a person die. That's
not getting involved. Yeah. No, I agree with you. And it's very difficult from a personal experience to have a group of people with the one who's struggling and then is deceased to be quiet and sit in mourning. They usually have to remove themselves from the site of this. So it's almost a natural kind of rest. I'm going to go and grieve or whatever the process is, but I don't think that's what was meant. There was a hand back there first.
Can we make a comment about the choices in Devakan? Mm-hmm. So what we think what has been said, we just want to clarify it then, that what occurs in Devakan, those issues that the soul is dealing with, so we can basically say that karmically, those are determined by what has transpired in that previous life. So the soul doesn't have a choice. Well, I'm going to think about Johnny and Jane and this and that. So everything that is unresolved of a higher nature based on the karma of that previous life, that's what will be dealt with in Devakan? Is that what we can say?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, for the mass of humanity, that cycle of reincarnation between lives is 1,000 to 1,500 years, and it's restful and it's beneficial. Being it's an illusionary state where we really don't accomplish anything for those here on Earth, it might be useful to get out of that state more quickly, to assimilate those lessons more quickly, to get that beneficial development more quickly while we are living on this planet. How is that possible? Can we live in such a way that shortens the time between lives?
Those who are deemed beneficial to humanity do often spend a shorter time in Devakan. I had a quote here from HPB that will be helpful for this. If I can find it, please bear with me. At any rate, what she says is, it's about life and the idea that, oh man, I think the elementals are attacking. They've stolen the page from me.
Don't invite them.
What she says is that if you are beneficial to humanity, your life is continuous. You are always, I wish I could find that. But your life is always needed. And because it's needed, you do come back quicker. You do, but you're stronger, so you can come back quicker. For those who don't have that stability, that force, it would be devastating for them to make a quick return. But even the depths can call you out of Devakan if your services are needed.
Hence why the last thought in the mind is so important. And we've struggled with that for years. How can the last thought before death color the whole experience?
Found it. Give me one second.
Okay.
There was two. Those who we think did live still in us as we live in them. The more one lives for his kind, the less need he fear to die. Then the second one is, and we might add this, that he who lives for humanity does even more than him who dies for it.
And we were reminded of the Kuan Yin pledge, although that is for maybe a higher level of development, we can still use it, and it begins, never will I seek private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone, but always and everywhere will I work for every creature in the world, something like that. So, okay, so if we, you can, yeah, if we dedicate our lives to work such as this, to helping humanity, to being, just being kind, there's so many people suffering out there, even just a smile or a hi could lift their day, that will naturally set up the length of time in Devakan. And we want to use and expand those altruistic desires while we're here. It makes life much, much richer. All right, in the blue in the back and then here.
It would also seem that how we consciously, mindfully lead a daily life has great impact. So if we are practicing moment to moment as best we can to detach from any extreme or strong emotional attachment, or if we detach from being lost in strong emotion, we're living in a karma-less kind of condition, in that we're living as the perceiver, not the personality. And that effort, sustained day after day or moment to moment as best we can, colors that last thought and therefore can shorten the sloughing off process in Kamaloka or the assimilation process in Devakan.
Right.
And then we can come again to serve as best we can.
Yes. And it is said, as my partner mentioned, the masters can come in and remind us you wanted to come back and be of service as quickly as possible. Are you ready? And you know, provide that. Yeah.
What comes to our mind is the term presiding elder. There must be something that we're missing out on under the topic of duty and responsibility. And that part of us that's untouched by death always was and ever will be. So what we have to learn is how to get in touch with the real self,
right,
and their responsibility and their duty.
Absolutely. The real self, which is not the one attached to desires and not the one who is selfish, but the observer, the thinker, the spiritual force which underlies all of life. If we can get in touch with that, we will be in much, much better shape. Yes.
With regard to, you know, how long is it going to take after death and whether the Mahatma would actually touch us and escort us back, et cetera, et cetera. Well, first, they won't and can't just do it to anyone because the person wants to. They have to follow the law, and therefore the conditions that we create for our after-death experience have to be conducive to that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And one way that some of the things that make the conditions not conducive to it is to live one's life for 80 years thinking about what they want to do when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, what I would do if this were that. And think about all these things. Meanwhile, they're living their day really not paying attention to what's going on because they're in some kind of dreamland, setting up these causes, mentating about this, creating this energy that they're going to have to assimilate in their after-death state. Why? Because they're not doing the soul work to assimilate it as they go. So we're told that, for instance, in the Gita, focus on what you have at hand, all your attention into what you're doing for the highest reasons as we go through life, And as the adept does that, all the lessons he has to learn and all the wisdom he's going to accumulate, he's going to assimilate as he goes. Therefore, by the time his physical body is done, he's got nothing built up. He has nothing to assimilate because he's been assimilating as he goes, and therefore there's no necessary reason to be in Devakan.
Exactly. What you're speaking of is a symptom that is prevalent in our society now. The desire to live either in the past or in the future and not in the now. Most of the things, when you speak of fear, that's one of the big deals with fear. Fear only exists in the future. What you're afraid of is something that hasn't happened, but might happen or will happen. So you're living in the future. And this idea of being completely in love with the past. People love the past because they know how it turned out. The present doesn't give us that guarantee. What's happening right now may not turn out the way you want it to, but that is the challenge, and that is what we're here to do.
And that is a perfect lead-in to the last page of this little book. It is not only in the fancy of the Devakani, as some may imagine, but reality, for pure divine love is not merely the blossom of a human heart, but has its roots in eternity. Spiritual holy love is immortal, and karma brings sooner or later all those who loved each other with such a spiritual affection to incarnate once more in the same family group. Again, we say that love beyond the grave, illusion though you may call it, has a magic and divine potency which reacts on the living. I thought that was a lovely idea.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, with the red sweat on?
No. Is not there a recapitulation period? Did we come into incarnation before we contact theosophy or whatever it is we were supposed to contact? But all of these ideas that we have now, we don't have. We don't know about karma. So isn't it possible that mistakes can be made during that cycle and later? You can learn in the incarnation, which would affect the Kamaloka state, because if you can deal with your problems as they come to you, that makes Kamaloka a lot easier.
There's two things to that. When we mentioned the soul about to incarnate gets a view of the lifetime to come, it's really an outline. Because we have free will, we will fill in all the empty spaces with how we feel and think and act and so forth. And we lost the other part of your comment.
Well, actually, you know, we have all kinds of karma with the
right.
person and the race
right.
and the family and the community.
Right.
That's an awful lot for someone who has not a great deal of wisdom to deal with in the proper way.
Absolutely.
So he becomes sort of personal and he deals with it as best he can and as best it serves him.
That's all theosophy asks, is deal with it as best you can. And unfortunately, after that preview, it says a curtain comes down and all of that is forgotten. So we're reawakening all the time. Yes.
And yet, children. If we listen to them open-mindedly, they seem to carry at least the fragrance of that experience in the way they interact with life, with kingdoms, their devotion, their trust. They seem to have an innocence and spiritual purity, which is, and that curtain really comes down later as they get older.
Yeah, and learn cynicism. Unfortunately, but they have at least a few years to play and be happy. So it's also a reminder to us as parents to watch this process and be ready at about the age of 7, the philosophy says, is when karma begins to adhere to that soul. Yes?
We were thinking, since you just brought this up about children, there's a lot of stuff that's going on, not just here in America, but all over the world, where young children are finding ways to get people to pull together to collect, for instance, money by selling whatever it might be, the lemonade, cookies, to be put back into areas that need the help. A lot of young children are really expressing this and starting all sorts of wonderful ideas of pulling together, kind of kind acts.
Their hearts have been opened, and they see with those eyes. We want to read something from Wordsworth and then getting close to the end of our time. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar. I love that idea. So we carry with us those pearls from lifetime to lifetime. And it also reminds us a little bit of Christmas.
The young man here had his hand up, but he seems reluctant.
We were wondering if someone has lived their life on the basis of vicarious atonement, and that's, they live their whole life thinking about the afterlife. They may suffer greatly in this life, but they feel that for eternity, I will be, you know, happy. What kind of effect does that have on the afterlife states? We think we know the answer, but does it extend it like greatly? Does it increase the time before they reincarnate, or maybe not?
Well, think.
There's a lot of people like that out there.
Yeah, but you know, actually, nature is merciful in its applications. And if that person, in thinking, still thinking this, but did everything that they could to be right, they understood that this, even with this so-called somebody else will take care of it for me, they take care of a lot of these things themselves. They strive to be useful to society. They strive to be a benefit to the loved ones and to their neighbors and all. This, you know, they, just because what they believe in is ignorance, but that's why we come back again and again to get to, abolish the ignorance, to get rid of the ignorance. But our good deeds, that part that is those pictures that come and are implanted into the very core of the eternal man, those are the ones that really benefit us. The things that we think and, you know, we believe this and we believe that, those, they pass with time, hopefully.
It's a good point. Look for that which does not change. I guess we're done.
We have 1 minute. Anybody have a 1 minute comment? We can hear it. You got 30 seconds. Okay, great. It's over. Today's class is over, and we look forward to seeing everyone on Wednesday.
And next week, the world of dreams. Quickly.
I'm sorry. I noticed it's not traditional, but I just had to say that it was great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're all volunteers. We don't have the Kuan Yin pledge up here. I'm looking for it. I thought we had. I know they're kind of falling apart. But
what?
It did used to be up here.